Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores.
Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeban Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the longest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys who are constantly double checking to make sure they didn't mistakenly draft Alex Laferriere. I am your host, Elon Dubrovsky. We've got a really fun show for you today. With me are two people on the line, but of course number one is my co-host, partner in crime, the fantasy hockey robot himself, Brian Combe.
Hello, Elon. Hello, everyone. Hello, mystery guest who is yet to be named. It is so nice to be here with all of you to get on the horn, as Elon said on the line, is reminding me of these old sort of how you talk about being on the phone with one another. So talk prospects. Elon, you had a fantastic episode with Will Scouch, a.k.a. Scouching, that I just devoured. So much good info in there, and we're going to follow up on that. And this time I'm excited because I get to be part of the prospects talk.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I had a blast talking to Scouching. He dropped a lot of good knowledge, and it was a lot of knowledge about like the actual real value of players. You know, I tried to squeeze as much fantasy as I could out of him, but I thought this week, let's follow it up, and let's talk about some more prospects. But this time, I've got a fantasy prospects expert, and some of you know him if you're part of our patron community or if you listen to the Fantasy Hockey Life podcast. He's also a huge San Jose Sharks fan and contributor to the hockey writer for the Sharks, Kings, and Stars. It's Victor Nuno. Welcome to the show, Victor.
Hey guys, awesome to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, really happy to have you here. And the reason why you are here specifically, aside from being a prospects expert, is you and I have been participating. You convinced me. I said on a patron cast one time a while back, I don't think I'm ever going to join a dynasty league. I gave all my reasons why I feel like dynasty leagues just aren't for me. And then you were just kind of like, come on. I was like, all right. And so you started a brand new dynasty league just this past summer during the NHL pause, like before the playoffs started. And it's like this crazy league with, you know, salary caps and all the categories, including like face-offs and takeaways, which I've never used. And the key of it was there were like two drafts. There was a pro draft where you could draft any player as long as they've played at least 82 games and whatever it was for goalies. And then a separate draft that we just started recently, only for prospects, players who have played 82 games or less. And so it's been a blast doing this draft. And I was thinking, like, if we're going to talk about prospects, why don't we do it? And at the same time, judge the people who have been in this draft with us and just kind of go through the results. And we talk about the players one by one. I would love to also get Brian's take on how he likes my picks. So it all comes together beautifully.
It sure does. This is going to be amazing. Like, we have draft content, which is what we're all craving right now. And it's this unique angle that I don't think we've really broken down, like, such a deep keeper prospects draft on the show before. We've always covered the players, but we've never really gotten to comment on the order and, you know, measuring the 19-year-olds versus the 20-year-olds versus the 21-year-olds versus the 18-year-olds and exactly the order in how you go versus guys who are established and already have a year or two under their belt and guys who have not even played a game yet because they were just drafted, like Alex Laferriere, who went first overall to the Rangers, as we all know. So I can't wait to sink our teeth into this.
Of course, Brian is joking. But yeah, there is another guy. This year's Sebastian Aho, but I guess a little bit easier than that. Okay, so we've got a lot to get into. Before we get into it, let's of course mention, first of all, that we are presented by DauberHockey.com, the number one fantasy hockey website out there. It's been free agent frenzy time since the last time we talked about it. And, you know, there's still been lots of news all the time. And Dauber Hockey's just been there covering it all. Amazing articles. Plus, I use the tools there all the time to prep the show over at Frozen Tools. So definitely check it out, DauberHockey.com. Okay, so before we get into this draft, Victor, you were talking to me about how we should probably just set some, not ground rules, but like some sort of general concepts around these dynasty drafts, because obviously one person's strategy doesn't necessarily have to match another person's strategy. It's not as easy to just say, oh, you should have picked this guy, you should have picked this guy instead. You were saying you wanted to just explain, like, what's the reasoning behind different strategies? So why don't you just go and give these different strategies?
Yeah, I think when you're drafting a new dynasty, you have to sort of decide what your plan is. whether you're going to try and win right now, the first season, or maybe kick it down the road a little bit and try to win in a few seasons, or sort of the hybrid model where you sort of have some really good players for now, but also some really good prospects. And those are really the main three options. And that's going to really determine like who you pick and how you sort of prioritize. And we did something interesting in this league too, which made for some absolute chaos, which was super fun, which was we allowed pick trading across pros and prospects. So you could trade a bunch of prospect picks for pros or vice versa. And it really allowed for people to maximize that strategy too. You could just, you know, vacate a bunch of your prospect picks to get, you know, earlier round pro picks or vice versa. And so that really, and what's fun about that too, is that, you know, in redraft leagues, it's like everyone's going for the best player, right? There's pretty much like a, you know, who the best players are. But when you're doing a dynasty league, it can definitely matter whether you want the best guy in 3 or 4 years or you want the best guy now. And so it allows for a lot of different strategies and for, you know, people that have good drafts, quote unquote, just with different strategies.
Elon, do you want to share now that you are a longtime member of Team Win Now? Like, your strategy has always been, and I think it's very clever, your line on whether to plan for the future, like a future dynasty, or to win now is basically, I don't know how long this league is going to last. A lot of people get into these dynasty leagues and they collapse within 2 years. So I want to win those 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, that's always been my mindset. Maybe now that I actually will participate in one, who knows, maybe my mind will change. But yeah, and by the way, I have a co-manager. It's Mathieu, who's here in the chat. So hey, Mathieu. So it's he and I discussing our picks together. And yeah, we definitely went with a win now mindset in the pro league. We were trying to get players that we thought were going to help us now. By the way, there's salary caps. So that was a big consideration. Like, Carey Price actually went pretty late as far as goalies, even though he might be one of the more valuable goalies next year, just because if you draft him, you're locked into him for like 10 years or whatever. But in general, I do like Team Win Now. I know Victor definitely doesn't, and he'll discuss that with some of the picks that he made. He also traded a bunch of his pro picks to get mm-hmm. extra picks in this prospects draft. So obviously, he's just thinking about 3-4 years down the road. I feel like it's like, first of all, yeah, this idea of like, I don't even know if this league is going to exist. And obviously, maybe this one's a little different because it's with some patrons and Victor's running it. So maybe I have a bit more confidence than usual. But also, it's just like, I'm not a patient person, Brian. Like, you know, from running this podcast with me, like, I can't imagine just like sitting and waiting season after season, losing over and over again. Obviously, there's like, I guess, some other things you could be having fun with, and you're watching how your prospects are doing, and you could be still moving picks or doing whatever. But I don't know, I've never played in a fantasy league where like I haven't made the playoffs, and I don't want it to start now. So I can't imagine being a losing team. But maybe I'll learn that this was a big mistake when like 2-3 years down the road, Matt, you and I are in, we're gonna be in cap hell, and we're gonna have no idea what we're doing. And yeah, it might be a disaster, but I'm hoping we'll have a championship under our belt by then.
I hope you're not dooming yourself to being what the Red Wings ended up being with their like 25-year streak, or what it ended up being, 26, of making the playoffs, except they were not a serious contender for the large part of those last years, yeah. You know, essentially since Lidstrom and co retired or moved on. So don't do that. You don't want to be a bubble team.
But to be fair, the Red Wings have some cups on their mantle, right? So at the end of the day, is it better to be them, or is it better to be...
Well, no, but I'm not comparing you to the prime Red Wings when all their players were in their primes and they were firing on all cylinders. I'm comparing you to the Red Wings after that, who were like, let's just keep the streak going and never draft first. And now, of course, they've got the tank perfected. I think they're going to tank another year. But let's see, Elon, are you going to tank? Is anyone clearly looking like they're going to tank from this draft?
Yeah, someone on this call is, and it's Victor, his pro team. Like, who did you even take first in the pro draft? Because I feel like you traded away some early picks, and you didn't pick until like round 4 or 5, right?
I picked in round 3, and I feel like I still got a pretty good player. I got Miro Heiskanen with my first pick, which was 52nd overall. So, you know,
that doesn't feel very tanky. Like, who was taken around that?
So around there went, so right before went Shabbat, after went Werenski, after went Riley, Landeskog,
Sagan. I'm not saying that that pick was tanky, but the fact that he traded his first two picks, that means all like 45, okay. It's 20 people in the league. So that was like a whole bunch of people that went before he got Haskinen, who's going to be great. And you're hoping that, I guess, he'll be the main defenseman. But I don't know. I don't even know if Haskinen is a number one defenseman in fantasy. Like, I don't know if you could win the league if Haskinen is your top defenseman. I think you want him in your, like, maybe top two or three. Maybe you'll disagree. Why don't you answer? Like, obviously, also, you got Haskinen before that amazing playoff run where his value skyrocketed. You wouldn't have been able to get him so late before. So, if anything, maybe I should be advising you to sell high.
Yeah, well, I think definitely Haskinen is not what some of these other top power play offensive defensemen are. But what he has that those other guys don't is he's going to play, you know, 25, 26 minutes a night, and that's going to allow him to rack up a lot of counting stats. And we also saw in the playoffs that he can score too, you know, so I don't think that he'll be like a necessarily a 60 point defenseman, but I think he has a pretty high floor to be, you know, in the 40s, 50s at least. And certainly there's upside for more. It just depends on whether he can unseat Klingberg, who's also very capable at running a power play. So yeah, there's definitely, like, it's not the highest upside guy for sure, but he's young and he certainly has capability of being a number one, certainly a top pairing guy. So that's part of the reason I went with him.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Brian, on the opposite side, I was definitely anti-tank. I actually traded a prospect pick early on. Mathieu and I traded our sixth round prospect pick for Matt Dumba, who at the time I was like, okay, we need a defenseman. He's a solid enough guy. He's got a pretty decent contract. Turns out the person who got picked in the prospect draft was Ville Husso, the, I guess, now backup. Or no, St. Louis. Did St. Louis end up signing a goalie to tandem with Binnington? They did, right?
No, I think he's the backup. I think Husso's going to be the backup.
Still got to wrap my head around all the goalies and where they all landed. Yeah, so Husso might be huge next year. But anyway, so different strategies for sure, like you said, Victor. A couple other strategies I wanted to bring up that I guess we'll like get into as we go through this draft. But I feel like there's also this idea, especially when you're picking prospects, of like you're going for like a player with like a high floor versus a player with a high ceiling. I know you judged me for a couple of my picks about like just trying to go for a guy that, you know, like, I know he's going to be in the NHL. I think he's going to be solid. We'll get to my John Marino pick in a little while. And you were like, come on, he's never going to be like a 60, 70 point guy. Why not go take a big swing? But of course, the downside is if you take a big swing, it might be someone who might not do anything, right? And so that's one thing. I guess that's just like a theme that we can talk about as we go through the picks. Why don't we just start with the picks? Actually, let's start at the top.
Finally.
We're 10 minutes into the show. I think we've set the table pretty well, hopefully. But so first pick went to the Kalamazoo Fighting Karens, a good friend of ours, Chris. And it wasn't a surprising pick to me. I'll be curious to hear, Victor, if it was surprising to you or Brian. But Alexis Lafreniere. And remember, these are all players who have played 82 games or less in the NHL that are owned by a team. So like Cale Makar was available to be drafted because he's played less than 82 games. But like you said, Miro Haskinen wasn't because he's played over 82 games. So just to make sure you understand it. But of all those eligible players, Lafreniere went first. And yeah, Victor, what did you think of the pick?
Can't argue with, though. I think the top four really were pretty interchangeable. It probably depended a little bit on team needs and whether you wanted that elite defenseman, elite winger, or elite center, because those, in my opinion, are the top four, which we'll get to in a second. Byfield, Lafreniere, Makar, and Hughes were really the four. I think they're in that conversation. So I think it makes sense to take a winger, really, because, you know, left wingers, especially at that high level, are pretty valuable. And so made sense. Plus his team is built to, you know, compete now. And Lafreniere is going to step into that role in the Rangers and just, you know, probably put up 60 points-ish. So that's pretty great. And especially, I think in these kind of leagues, it all comes down to value per dollar. And that value per dollar that Lafreniere is going to give right off the bat is just ridiculous. It's probably the best in this entire draft. So that makes sense.
Yeah. You sort of have to contextualize it, just to be clear. So everybody, I think you mentioned Elon has to have fewer than 82 NHL games played in this draft. So just looking at it, I'm going to just rhyme off the next three picks to help contextualize who Lafreniere is being chosen instead of. So ahead of Cale Makar and then the Quintons, Byfield and Hughes going three and four before we had a mini goalie run. But those were the top four skaters off the board. In that context, like I see your point, Victor. Lafreniere is going to be the cheapest for the longest, along with Byfield, but Byfield might not be playing in the NHL immediately after listening to the interview with Will Skouch who said, you know, he might get a tryout, 8 to 10 games, and then maybe he stays, maybe he doesn't. But the Kings also aren't a really great team, and who knows how much opportunity there'll really be for Byfield to succeed with, like, with what wingers, right? And Lafreniere has the advantage of getting to play with a bona fide NHL centerman for sure. So I like Lafreniere over Byfield. Over Makar and Hughes is a little dicier for me, because obviously I love their defensive eligibility. And plus, they're not, like, they're just 1 year further out. You know, you'll have one less year of their ELC. You'll have to pay them sooner. But to be honest, I think it might be worth it for that position eligibility, though I've always been a sucker for a top-end defenseman.
I think that I would agree with you, because that value over replacement, right? That elite D with Makar and Hughes, I think you have to... I probably, if I were winning now, I probably would have picked... In fact, we actually did a mirror league of this, because why not have even more leagues, right? We actually did another one where I took Elon's strategy, actually, and I had the very first pick in that prospect draft, and I took Makar, because I think if you're trying to win now, that value over replacement probably exceeds Lafreniere, although I think it's close, right? It probably depends on how your team is built, and if your team is lacking that, as Elon was saying, top end fantasy, you know, defenseman, then it makes sense to take one of those two. And Makar, I think, is a slightly ahead of Hughes, because Hughes just, like, I think he's allergic to hitting. He just doesn't hit anything. So Makar gives you a little bit in that sense. And I think the points are pretty similar. So a little bit of a boost there for Makar.
Yeah, that's the thing to me. And I guess we don't really need to dig too deep into Makar and Hughes. People know all about them. But I would be a little concerned that with the peripherals. Like I said, like, Quinn Hughes is awesome, and he might be a 70-point defenseman next year, and he's going to be great for assists, great for power play points, no doubt. But he had 126 shots in his first season, like, in 68 games, which is like 2 shots a game, which is decent for a defenseman, but not, like, amazing. And then, like you said, he only had 7 hits, I'm counting, and then 46 blocks. And Makar also, by the way, only, like, 47 blocks in 57 games. So, like, these are, like, rookies, so it's possible that they're gonna, you know, play, I don't know, more physical games and get more hits and blocks moving forward. But that'd be a reason for me to maybe go with, like, a Lafreniere, just because you're getting this elite defenseman, but they might not even actually be the top defenseman in fantasy just for a league like this, which, again, is, like, goals, assists, shots, like, special teams points, hits, blocks, like, the whole shebang. But you can't, obviously you can't go wrong with them.
I mean, when you're comparing them to the guys who are, like, 21 and under, I still think, you know, no one else sticks out. But, you know, depending on if you already covered that base in the pro draft, or you're like, yeah, I'm going to have a pro who's already played more than a full season and is going to cover more categories, then that gives you some license, of course, to go for a forward instead. So I don't know who Chris's pro picks were, and if he already had that position covered off, but it's definitely justifiable. But I will push back a little on you saying, like, you want other guys, because, like, none of these guys who've played fewer than 82 games and are defensemen have really proven anything about themselves in that, like, especially for a defenseman, you know, you never know just how low someone's ceiling might be. So I would be going for straight up points rather than guessing around for who's going to be the best all around breadth category filler.
Yeah, can I throw one name at you? So we could jump around, I guess, a little bit. A 10th overall. By the way, my first pick, me and Matthew didn't pick till 20th overall for our first pick. So don't get me wrong. If Makar or Hughes or anyone like that would have fallen to us, we would have been salivating and taking them in a second. What about 10th overall Adam Fox, who had a really solid rookie year? Obviously, he wasn't, like, a top power play getting, like, 60, 70-point paces like Makar and Hughes, but he had a solid, like, 44 points in 70 games, so almost, like, a 50-point pace. And we had, you know, 92 blocks, which is, you know, so we help with the peripherals. And who knows, like, if D'Angelo holds. I'm just curious to know, like, Victor, I think I've heard you say you're very high on Adam Fox. Like, do you think that there's an argument to be made that Fox could be more valuable than Quinn Hughes in a multi-category league just because of his peripherals and still, like, a pretty high offensive upside? Or is that crazy talk?
No, it's 100%. I definitely like that pick. He went right before my next pick, which I would have considered him, but I probably wouldn't have. But Fox is, I think, probably should have won the Calder this year. Quite honestly, he was that good. Wow. And when you look at real life numbers, his wins above replacement, goals above replacement, just blew those other guys out of the water. So in terms of total impact on the team, he was way better. Plus he, he at even strength was great. I think he outscored them at even strength, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't have the opportunity, right? He didn't run the power play, but when he was given the opportunity, he showed that he was capable. I think the reason why in fantasy, I'm a little not as gung-ho in both feet on Fox is because there's so many options there in New York, right? I mean, you have Tony D. I don't think Trouba is really going to get a look on the top power play, but you have Kendra Miller coming up, and Nils Lundqvist might be the best of all of them. So he's going to have a lot of competition. And so for that reason, I probably would shy just a little bit away. Whereas like no one's taking Hughes's spot. I don't think Byram's going to take Makar's spot, although that's an interesting discussion that we could have. But for that reason, I would probably not go so high on Fox, but he is amazing. He is an amazing defenseman, and he very soon could be I think he was the best defenseman on that team just as a rookie, which is crazy.
Yeah, I'll pump Fox's tires a little bit and just point out, Elon, you said you gave his 70-game point totals, but he didn't do anything for the first 7 games of the season. If you take those out, and that's not a lot because he still has 63 games after that, he finished the year with 42 points in 63 games, which is a full season 55-point pace. He did manage 13 power play points, even though he wasn't full-time quarterbacking the power play. Victor, I share your hesitation and reluctance about Fox and that you just don't know how high his upside can be if when there are so many other players in the picture, and the Rangers do seem pretty committed to D'Angelo. So that's a reason to sort of avoid Fox. But he seems like one of those guys who could, even if he's not quarterbacking the top power play, he might still find a way to 45 or 50 points, especially if the Rangers have this great firepower that they're supposed to within the next couple years, right? With guys like Kako and Lafreniere growing and Zibanejad and Panarin. I don't need to name you the Rangers roster. You know them, but he's got a good group of guys to work with.
Definitely. Yeah, the Rangers are a good place to be. I'm definitely thinking, Brian, that for next season of Keeping Carlson, I'm going to be buying a Rangers hat. I just need to like have a good fantasy draft where I get a bunch of Rangers. Like if I could get like Panarin in the cupful, I'm done. I'm a Rangers fan because it's very exciting. And actually, you know, we've already talked about Lafreniere. We've already talked about Fox. There was still another Ranger that got taken in the top 10, and that was in this goalie run, Igor Shesterkin. So yeah, just very exciting about the Rangers. But I guess actually before we get to that, Victor, I'm sure you want to talk about the guy who you took with your first pick in the draft, which was third overall. So Lafreniere went, then Makar. You could have taken Quinn Hughes, but you went with the other Quinton Byfield. So yeah, here's your chance to talk about why you were such a brilliant genius to take Quinton Byfield third overall in the prospect draft.
I mean, the thing about Byfield, and I know that I'm one of the few people on Team Byfield over even Lafreniere, because I would take him first in a shallower dynasty, like just for the 2020s, and I have so far actually. But the thing is that he's so young; he's 10 months younger than Lafreniere, and so when you look at it that way, and you look at their equivalency, it's more fair to compare what Byfield did this year to what Lafreniere did last season, the season before. And when you do that, it's not even close. Byfield is way better, and not only that, I know that centers can be faded, and so if you don't count faceoff wins in some of the other categories, then it's probably closer like wing over center. I could hear that argument. But in this league specifically, which counts faceoff wins and all the peripherals, he's a unicorn. He's big. He's strong. He's going to hit people. He's going to win faceoffs. He's going to score at probably a similar rate to Lafreniere, I would imagine, at their peak. And so for all those reasons, I'm taking the guy that you could never, like, you can't replace a guy like that in his peak. Like, they're like those top end, number one, all situation centers do not grow on trees, and they're very rare. And so, even though, yes, fade centers, but to me, not at the very top, you don't.
Damn.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good justification, especially if you're building your core that you want to build around. You expect to have this guy for, assuming the league lasts that long, 10, 15 years, it's going to be hard to pick out another. You might not have another chance for a long time to pick out another Quinton Byfield. So I'm down with that. Let's talk about this goalie run, though, that went. So Byfield, Quinn Hughes, and then a surprising name at the top of this goalie run. If you were to name all the goalies who pretty much we just started seeing this year or just coming over, you've got Shesterkin, He wasn't the first in this run. Sorokin was not the first in this run. Samsonov was not the first in this run. Thatcher Demko led this goalie run. I have to say that's not how I would have done it. Shesterkin went next, and Sorokin and Samsonov. I don't know that I would even have taken Demko second in this goalie run. Was this draft sometime around that like huge, what was it, like 45 save game that he had that put him like, you know, that made everybody think that the Canucks could actually let go of Markstrom and survive?
It was it had happened already. Yeah. I wonder if that
was it
in.
Like the same night though? Like was this happening at the draft?
But okay. Brian, like doesn't matter, right? It happened. That's the last thing we've seen of Demko. So obviously Kevin, who made this pick, liked what he saw.
Yeah.
I'm assuming then he made that pick and then afterwards the Canucks signed Braden Holtby. I don't know if that made him dislike the pick a little more.
Probably.
But maybe he's not thinking about just next season. Maybe he's thinking about like multi-years down the road. Like definitely Thatcher Demko's been talked about as like a top prospect on the Canucks. They're expecting to come up and be the number one goalie. But yeah, I wonder if I definitely agree with you, Brian, that I wonder if that would have been Kevin's pick if those three games at the end of the playoff series versus Vegas like wouldn't have happened. Victor, what do you think? If you were to rank Demko, Shesterkin, Sorokin, and Samsonov in terms of who you'd want on your team, how would you rank them?
Well, Demko wouldn't even be fourth. He'd probably be, I don't know, 15th on my goalie list.
What?
So I would definitely not have taken him there. That's 100% sure. Yeah.
Elon, between us, could we name 15 goalies who have played fewer? I think we could just because we've been so focused on the draft, but like, it's a unique point in time that we probably could. 15th. I mean, I can think of a couple others, but sorry to interrupt you.
Well, okay. As we're going through the draft and we'll get to goalies, then Victor will answer whether he likes this guy better than Demko. But why are you so down on Demko? I want to know now if this is my, like, I assume maybe, yeah, maybe he's not as good as Shesterkin, but I thought he was pretty good.
No, he is. That's why he's in the top 15. But part of it is that we've seen what he can do. Yes. And I'm with Brian. You can't just, like with everybody, you can't just look at what he did in the playoffs. That was ridiculous. 2 goals in 3 games. He was playing out of his mind. But when you look at the regular season, you know, he couldn't outperform the protection that the team offered in front of him, which is a really bad sign. And his goals saved above average and expected were both negative. So, you know, it wasn't a super impressive regular season. I still think that I wouldn't hold that necessarily against him and say that he's a bad goalie, but he's certainly not on the level with these other guys. And opportunity matters. And I'm sure that Kevin was thinking, yeah, he's going to be the starter. And so that's part of it. And starters are hard to come by in a 20 team league where we're all rostering, you know, 2 to 3 goalies. It's going to be tough. So I think that that was part of it. But on his talent alone, for sure, I would say Shesterkin is the top. I mean, he's shown it on a bad Rangers team, way outperforming the protection that was offered to him. I think that I would, even though we haven't seen him do it at this level, I like Sorokin next because just looking at his KHL stats and the scouting reports, he looks to be in the same conversation as Shesterkin. And Samsonov, I think, is maybe just a step behind, but he's in that. Those three Russians are in the conversation for the top three for me. And then I also like Merzlikins, who went a little bit later. And I really like your pick, Elon. He's one of my top guys for sure.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're talking about Cal Peterson, I looked at, and I'll be honest, I was like, really?
Brian, let me tell you this.
I know. Well, I just remember how much you love Cal Peterson. Like, I know you've been like, every chance you get, you're like, well, you know, he could be a breakout candidate. Like, he's someone who's on the up and up.
All right, so before Victor talks about how awesome Cal Peterson is, I will tell you that in the draft, as we were doing it, it came to our pick. Mathieu and I had this idea in our heads. It was like Kako was falling, and like Suzuki at one point, it seemed like he was falling. Like we had a couple guys we were like really excited about getting, and then like we got sniped on them like right before our picks. I don't know if you could say sniped on like these guys that probably we shouldn't have expected to fall to us at 20th overall. But then when it finally came to our pick, we were like, okay, who should we take? And Mathieu, oh, by the way, I should also mention, Brian, that it was my like one goal in the pro draft, like not reach for goalies. It's like, I really had it in my head that goalies are always letting us down. I'm not going to let us take some, like, whatever, Bobrovsky or even someone who was good last year. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, who were the best goalies. Like, I don't know, Vasilevsky, obviously, Leonard. You know, I didn't want to take a goalie high. I would rather take, you know, good, solid forwards that are going to, like, fill multi-categories and do all that good stuff for us. And then I was thinking, we'll deal with it in the prospects draft. And so in the pro draft, we just got Ullmark at some point, like, really late. And then we got Thomas Greiss, like, even later, who's now, by the way, a starting goalie on, like, a terrible team. But still, like, I don't know. I'm okay with that. And then anyway, so we, like, knew we were going to go for a goalie in this draft pretty early. And Mathieu was like, let's go with Cal Peterson. And honestly, Brian, I had your voice in my head saying, like, Cal Peterson's, come on, he's not that good. Anyways, but then Mathieu convinced me that we should. He was like saying, you know, LA's looking so amazing, like all these prospects. Like, you just heard Victor talk about how Quinn Byfield is going to be like the best guy of all time. And they've got like Turcotte and Kalyov and whoever. And so anyways, plus, you know, as Brian, as you have said a lot, like, Jonathan Quick is not exactly the top goalie in the league anymore himself. So it's like just a matter of time before Cal Peterson takes over. Anyways, we dropped that Peterson pick. That Brian, the chat room was beautiful. So many like, no, oh no, God, Josh darn it. Like, people were very unhappy with that pick, which obviously made me very happy. So seems like these prospect people, they really like Cal Peterson. So for what it's worth.
I should also mention one other thing that I think is really interesting. This, when I set up this league, one thing I chose specifically is that the goalie stat is even strain save percentage. So in Fantrax, it gives you the option of not just having straight up save percentage, but even strength. And the reason I picked that, we all know that even strength save percentage is more sustainable and more reflection of what is going on with that goalie, as opposed to it's much harder, right, to save at on the penalty kill. So I think that, you know, that's going to allow the goalies to at least hopefully be more representative of what their actual skill is and not be swayed so much by the shorthanded or power play situation. So I don't know if you guys thought about that at all, but for me, it just allowed me to, I think, rely more on just the inherent talent of the goalkeeper and not,
right.
I mean, yes, the situation matters, but not just, you know, be swayed by those other factors as much.
So, Brian, after all of this, are you still kind of like rolling your eyes a bit at the Cal Peterson pick, or do you think it's okay?
Like a little. I just like, so Cal Peterson, for anyone who doesn't know, he was drafted in 2013 by the Sabres. So he turned 27 like last week. So happy belated birthday, Cal Peterson. He was drafted. And then after he was signed by the Sabres, he never signed a contract with them. So he just became a free agent and just signed his entry-level deal with the Kings. And things have gone really well for him so far in his NHL stints. In 19 NHL games, 923 save percentage, 10-7-1 record. So way to go. But in his AHL record, but I never really go much by AHL record, especially with goalies. It doesn't seem to be terribly predictive because a lot of goalies in the AHL, especially if they're bound for the NHL, are working out aspects of their game. Like, it's a safer space. The stakes aren't as high. So they're usually trying to fix a part of their game or improve a part of their game that might make them somewhat uncomfortable. So I'm not so turned off by the fact that Peterson has essentially a 900 save percentage over 75 career AHL games in the last two seasons. Sorry, his first season was better. He had a 910 save percentage in the AHL, which I'm conveniently leaving out. But I just, yeah, I mean, I like the thought that he's going to be good in LA when LA is good, but that still might be several years out. And I'm not sure that's going to be any sooner than guys who I think are supposed to be actually better goalies who went later, like Askarov. He went in the second round, mm-hmm. seventh pick, second round, so 27th overall, so seven picks after you. And then I guess you have Jake Ettinger, Kaapo Kähkönen, Spetzner Knight going 38, 39, and 40 is another group of goalies who, like, I don't know, I wouldn't like jump so high for Cal Peterson above them, but you did.
Well, let me offer one more thing, because I think that he only has 19 NHL games and LA is not good, but he has almost just Shesterkin-like numbers in those games he played for LA. He well outperformed his Delta Fenwick, and he had 8 goals saved above expected. remember, this is a bad LA team. So I know that's not a huge sample size, but I think the advanced numbers show that he's pretty good. And I agree with you that I don't think on his talent alone, he's better than those other goalies. But I think you combine that with the situation. And I think LA is going to be a dominant team in 2 or 3 years for a long time. And so I think Peterson is going to get starts. I mean, he's probably going to be, I don't know, at worst 40-60 with Quick, maybe even 50-50, especially with this compressed schedule that we're going to have. So I think you take all that into account, and I think that you're getting a very valuable goalie. And, you know, it may be a bit of a reach, but for a team that wants to compete right now, I think it makes perfect sense.
Right, yeah, Brian, I guess, obviously, like, a lot of these picks...
I support you, Elon. Yeah. You can rub this in my face all you want. It seemed like a bit of a reach, but... I imagine the other 19 managers in your league have a better read on who is valuable and when. So
sure.
If you had the jaws dropped in the draft chat, then maybe you shouldn't listen to me.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with you. Like, probably Askarov, who went to Nashville and in the first round of the NHL draft of this year, is probably going to be the more valuable guy. But like I said, like, Matthew and I want to win, like, now, like, in the next 2-3 seasons before all of our contracts catch up to us. So I guess, yeah, we took a shot on someone that we think will play right away. But it'll make you happy, Brian, that then in round 4, we went with another goalie who somehow fell super far in this prospects draft. I'll be curious to ask Victor why he thinks that happened. But we got Pavel Francouz, who I think is, like, basically tandem with Grubauer in Colorado, and he still has a couple years left on a pretty decent contract, like $2 million a year. Obviously, like, we're paying more than, like, a Cal Peterson, who still has 2 years, like $800,000. But we got Pavel Francouz pretty late, so all of a sudden now our team that, like, didn't think about goalies at all in the pro draft, I think we've got 4 solidish guys. But yeah, I'm curious to know, I guess, from both of you, what your thoughts are on Pavel Francouz. And then I promise after this I won't just, like, focus on my team, and we'll actually just go through the picks. But since we're talking about goalies anyways, and then maybe also, Victor, while you comment on Francouz, you could also maybe touch on, like, the Edingers, Kakanen, Spencer Knight, on if you think that they're better than Thatcher Demko.
Yes, I think all those guys are better than Demko, quite honestly. but I don't think that the situation is necessarily better. So you have to take into account the quality of the goalie. Like, Edinger, as much as I like Edinger, he's blocked, right? I mean, Bishop is there, Hudobin is there. When is he going to get to play? 3 years, 2-3 years from now? That's not very valuable. So that's a long wait on a goalie that could be really good. A lot of ifs, ands, and buts. So I think his fantasy value is lower, but the goalie himself, I think, is really good. And I think Kakanen has an outstanding situation, and I think he is also really good, and he's shown it at the AHL level. Spencer Knight, who I took, actually, I think is up there as one of the best prospect goalies out there, but it's a long wait. So it made sense for my team, right? Because I'm not looking to win right now, so I can wait 2 or 3 years until he's relevant. But yeah, I think that Demko is in that conversation, you know, in the 10 to 15 range, which those guys are, you know, around there. So, but I do, and Francouz has shown in his small-ish sample size in 34 games with Colorado that he can outperform by 0.21 the protection that's offered to him, and has saved almost 3 goals above average, I mean above expected. So, you know, he's a pretty good goalie. I think that I wonder if maybe his performance in the playoff hurt his value, and that's why he dropped a little bit, because he had a little bit of a rough couple games against the Stars.
Yeah, then he was injured, and then maybe he didn't even look that bad compared to what Michael Hutchinson did. But by the way, I will stop in quickly on Kaapo Kakanen, who Pete and Ryan have. I agree with you that that's a good situation in Minnesota. Like, they got Talbot now, so I guess Kakanen maybe starts the year in the minors again, and it'll be Talbot and...
Stalock,
right, yeah, who took over from Dubnyk at the end of the season. So, but it does seem like it's not too many people in the way, and I have heard good things about Kaapo Kakanen. But okay, let's go back to the first round now. So there was this goalie run, then there was a guy, and then Adam Fox, who we've discussed. And that guy, in number 9th overall, someone who hasn't played in the NHL yet and hasn't been drafted recently, so kind of a rare person to see. In the I think everyone else in the first round has either played NHL games or was drafted in the last year or two. And I'm talking about Kirill Kaprizov, who's been in the KHL, I guess, doing very, very well there. And now he's going to come into the Minnesota Wild. Is it, like, just a sure thing to you, Victor, that he's coming to the top line, top power play, like, he's going to get the best deployment, he's going to be, like, a superstar on this team along with Fiala?
I mean, he pretty much has the highest upside of anyone on that team, I think. I do think Fiala is a star, and he certainly showed it at the NHL level. So, you know, obviously he has the edge there. But, yeah, I think Kaprizov is – for sure like the top left wing option in Minnesota. So he should get all the best deployment. Hopefully Marco Rossi makes the team and can play center, because other than that, I can't see Nick Bonino making Kaprizov's value super high. So that's the problem. I mean, that's the only thing that really limits his upside, because, you know, he just looks like a star. But if you don't have someone to pass it to you and a winger on the other side that can take some of the heat, his upside is going to be ultimately a little bit dampened. But I do think he has, you know, he has Panarin like upside for sure. If the situation can work out, I don't think he'll quite get to that point, certainly not in the first year. And he is a little bit older, so at this point he's probably like in his prime. And so that's a little bit of the downside with him. He's definitely a guy that you want if you're winning now. Like for me, that would make no sense for my team to take him, because by the time my team was good, he'd be on the downhill.
For sure. Yeah. Like that's the big concern about Kirill Kaprizov, is that he's got no one to play with. He's got Fiala, assuming that the Wild want to stack one line with two of their most exciting offensive players, and play no one with him. What he does have going for him is that he's 23 years old already. So hopefully, he's grown a little bit into the role of being a full-time NHLer without having to actually have been in the NHL to play the games. He's just older. He's been playing against men for a few years now. In fact, he led the KHL in goal scoring last year with 33 goals and finished third in the KHL in points behind Dmitry Yaskin. And anyone want to guess who led the KHL in points last season?
I don't know. Give me a clue.
It's somebody who didn't get a fair shot in the NHL.
Oh, was it Eddie Yakupov? Lack. No.
Who did you say, Elon?
I was joking. Eddie Lack. I don't know. He's someone that you always say didn't get a fair shot.
No, I've never said that about Eddie Lack. Vadim Shipachov.
Shipachov.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, who led the league with 48 assists ahead of Linus Omark's 42. Anyway, I'm not going to – I love going through KHL scoring leaders, just for the names you see. But Kaprizov led his team, of course, followed far behind by former LA King Lyndon Vey. I'm doing it again. Sorry. So Kaprizov is a nice, exciting pick, and someone who just feels more mature than anybody drafted in this crop, like in the most recent crop, and who might have higher upside or as high upside than anybody who was drafted in that crop. So we had Kaprizov and then Adam Fox, and then Jack Hughes goes 11th, which to me feels pretty good. Like,
that was
Victor,
me.
You talked about like reaching out and grabbing. Oh, that was you. So you got Quinton Byfield and Jack Hughes, and you were talking about how hard it is to find one generational franchise cornerstone centerman, but you grabbed two in the first 11 picks of the first round.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that. There were some options there at 11. There were still some pretty decent skaters with good upside. But I felt like Hughes has probably one of the highest upside of any of the guys left that was there. And I do think I still have this feeling that he's going to be a winger. And so I was kind of thinking about that too, because I didn't want too many centers. Like, you can't have just 12 centers on your team, you know? But at this point, my team is so young that it doesn't probably matter. And I just was looking for the highest points upside guy. And I think Hughes, you know, has century mark upside, and I don't think he's going to hit it this year, maybe not even next season, but I do think that he can get there.
And New Jersey seems like they're starting to fill out their forward core with some good players. They got Holtz, I believe, in this draft, which people are excited about. I listened to your podcast recently, Fantasy Hockey Life, with Jesse Sevier, and you were talking about how you guys are very excited about the group of players that are going to be available for Hughes and Hischier to play with in the next few years, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had a great draft. I think Holtz, you know, could play in the league. And then you have, I think Hischier is a very underrated center, who I took in the pro draft, actually, in this league. I think he's an underrated center. I think, you know, Gusev had a tough adjustment, but I think he should be pretty good. They have some really good talent in that top six. And I think looking down the road, Dawson Mercer is another guy that they took in the first round that I think has some pretty high end upside too. So it sure seems like New Jersey is going to be pretty good, but I sort of hesitate too, because I thought they were going to be pretty good this year, looking at all their offseason moves, and they were just awful.
Well, yeah. Well, their big three acquisitions were Hughes, who they drafted, and Subban and Gusev. and all three looked like not huge busts, but like all three were not great for the first. I guess PK Subban was kind of a huge bust. Like all three were not great a couple months into the season. But yeah, Hughes, we assume, will get a lot better. And Gusev already did show that he can be a lot better. And who knows with PK Subban? But yeah, I'm excited about that team for sure. By the way, I thought it was really funny, Victor, how you said that like picking Kaprizov would make no sense for your team because by the time your team's ready to compete, he'll be like too old. Like he's 23. Like when is your team planning to compete?
No, I just mean that when is he gonna like his peak upside is like gonna be in the next season or two. But I mean I plan to win several championships in 3 or 4 years. That's my plan. It's not gonna be this season, it's not gonna be next season, but in a few years, yeah, watch out. And the other thing I wanted to say about Hughes is that no one has ever done what he did, right? No one has come straight from the U.S. National Team Development Program and go straight to the NHL. That's like three levels that he jumped. You know, it's really, really crazy that he went that far. And so the fact that he was like, you know, meh in the NHL this season is still like amazing that he was able to do that. And there were definitely times where he looked really good. And, you know, he's going to figure it out. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely forgiving that first season for that reason, because he was following a brand new path. And also, like, things were not totally neat and tidy in New Jersey either. There was a coaching change and the whole Taylor Hall thing, sitting out games, feels like ages ago, but this all happened during Jack Hughes' first season. It would be unfair to judge him, especially as an 18-year-old centerman, on any of it. So I love that you took a didn't even take a swing, that you were able to nab him this far down beyond Thatcher Demko. Sorry, Kevin, if you're listening, I don't mean to rag on you. Okay, after Jack Hughes, Elvis Merzlikins went, who is a pretty great get, especially for as long as he plays in Columbus on a Tortorella coach team who protects their goalie so well. But that's not to take credit away from Merzlikins, who did look legit and real. And then I'm just going to roll out the rest of the first round. And then Elon and Victor, how about you guys let me know if there's anybody you want to slow down and talk about. So we have Nick Suzuki, then Adam Boqvist, Kirby Doc, Marco Rossi, Tim Stützle, Kaapo Kakko, Trevor Zegras, and of course, Cal Peterson rounding it out. I think there are a couple interesting nuggets in there. Elon, you want to pick a direction to go first?
Sure. I mean, I like a lot of these players for sure. I guess we could break it up into two groups. We have the people who were just drafted in Rossi and Stützle. And then we've got, obviously, Kaapo Kakko and Boqvist and Doc and Suzuki, who all had their rookie seasons last year. Like, Victor, how about we start with saying, like, of those people who have played a year in the NHL, like, who are you most excited about? Like, Suzuki obviously really stepped up on the Habs as being, like, this guy could be their number one center, like, next year. Kaapo Kakko, on the other hand, kind of was like Jack Hughes. I kind of struggled out of the gate and didn't have a very exciting season. And then you've got like Doc and Boqvist over on Chicago, who I think I like that Chicago gave them a chance because they weren't a competing team. And now they've officially announced that they're in a rebuild. So yeah, I'd be curious to know like which of those four you're like most excited about, and if any of them you think are like maybe people are too high on.
Yeah, well, I had a pick in the middle of that run, and I feel like I got the guy that I like the best. So, you know, whatever that's worth, I picked Doc. And he may not have like the high, like may not look like the highest upside, but part of the reason I picked him is because he is a center, and what he's done already in the NHL is pretty impressive. In his first year, I mean, he, you know, came out and was, you know, played meaningful minutes. And when I watched him, like, you know, he did not look out of place. He could play with the stars on the team. So I really like that from Doc. I think that Suzuki certainly has come of age and he has high upside. I'm a little, I don't know what they're doing with the centers in Montreal. I think it's kind of interesting. I think he's clearly ahead of Kakaniemi, but Deneau is very capable too. So, and also when I was looking into Suzuki, he is kind of a liability to get scored on. So he's kind of a high event player. When he's out there, he either scores or gets scored on. So that's not necessarily great for his long-term projection. Like he needs to figure that out or his coach is not going to give him the longest leash. And so that's a little bit tricky. And I think Kakko, I like that pick too. I really debated heavily Kakko and Doc just because partly because of the winger and partly because I still think Kakko can be really good. And especially he's a physical winger that is in a great situation and maybe slightly less great now that they have Lafreniere, but I think also still going to be be able to put up a lot of points. So I really like that. And were we also talking Boakvist or not yet?
Yeah, I didn't want to also bring up Boakvist. He played last year.
Yeah.
Got a shot on the top power play, like right out of the gate as an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I like Boakvist. I think that he's pretty well-rounded. I'm not sure that top power play is 100% going to be his. They have a couple of other options, including Duncan Keith still being there and the ghost of Brent Seabrook. But they do have Ian Mitchell, who's a pretty capable guy coming in. And he, I don't know which one of those is going to take it. I think it's a question. So part of the reason why I would not have gone Boakvist there, I think Boakvist is probably a second or third rounder is where I would have pegged him in this. I think there are defensemen that have higher upside, but he's definitely a guy who's in the league contributing now. So from that perspective, you like it because he's certainly helpful.
Right. So who would you say of the defensemen who went after Boakvist, who would you have taken at this point? If you could take just like overall upside, like who fits best on your team?
Oh, 100% Bowen Byram. I think this may be a hot take, but I think Bowen Byram might be better than Cale Makar.
Wow. And do you think it's like he's better enough that, you know, the coaching staff will actually give him a shot to, right, to get the opportunity to be on the top power play?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, I think that they have such an embarrassment of riches on the blue line. They just acquired Taves. They have Girard, who's very capable. Eric Johnson's very underrated. He's good. But I think that Byram is a similar player to Makar. I think he's very offensive, but he's also pretty decent in his own zone. And so I think those two, I mean, it's almost like a Carlson Burns kind of thing. I think that there's like, who do you pick? It's like, they're both great. I don't know which one. I think that they're in the same conversation. And so that's who I would have taken.
Cool. And then I guess on the other side, we've got these guys who were drafted just this year, and Tim Stützle, who went third overall, LaMarco Rossi, all the way like ninth overall. He can't be that good, right? If he fell so far in the draft.
Okay. Well, like I sense your sarcasm, but I think the story here, Ilan, is that this draft flipped the order for them, right? Rossi went one pick ahead of Stützle. So somebody's really believing in Rossi. Like, I haven't heard a whole lot about Rossi being better than Stützle, just maybe the fourth pick, like deserving of being the next forward taken after Stützle, ahead of Lucas Raymond, ahead of Jake Sanderson as a defenseman. But Rossi over Stützle, Victor, is that a hot take?
No, I was going to say, you're about to hear it right now. Rossi is 100% better, in my opinion, than Stützle. I think that there's no question what he did in the OHL was just absurd. And the fact that they got him at ninth was just, I mean, it, you know, Buffalo walks up there and says from the Iowa 67s, and everyone's like, okay, they're taking Rossi. That makes sense. And then they take Jack Quinn, and it's like, what? You didn't even take the best player on the junior team. So that was wild. And, for sure, I think Rossi has the highest, I think he has the third highest upside in the 2020 draft. I think that when we look back at this 5 to 10 years from now, we're going to look back and say, how in the heck did Marco Rossi go so late? And I think that he has huge points upside. He's also walking into just the best possible situation, right? A team with no number one center. He's just rocketing up that depth chart. And I think he's one of the few in this draft class that could actually play this season and could be, you know, given decent minutes and good line mates. We already talked about the line mates that he could have, Fiala and Kaprizov. So, you know, I think that that's just an amazing value pick. And quite frankly, I almost went Rossi, but for part of those reasons of like, well, you know, there's some questions of whether he's like tall enough and that, but I think his upside is just really big. And I kind of I deliberated a lot between those two because I think between Doc and Rossi, it's I think, you know, I don't know, Rossi might have the higher upside, but Doc has certainly proven it. So there's that part as well.
Yeah, okay, Victor. But Brian right here is like furrowing his brow because he's a Sens fan and he wants to know, how dare you say that the Sens messed up that pick? Are you like, are you just so high on Rossi?
Or I'm not is saying there any of that? Just for
I'm
go
reading
ahead
your
with
face.
Your question.
I'm reading your face.
You're reading it incorrectly.
I just want to know, like, is it more when you say Rossi better than Stützle? Is that more just like how great Rossi is, or is there any of that to like maybe Stützle isn't that great in terms of fantasy? Of course, maybe you could also give his real life, but like, what do you think about, is the comparison between the two of them close or not even close to you
in real life or in fantasy?
I guess both.
In real life, it's not even close. Marco Rossi is going to be a more impact player, I think, because I do think he can play center at the NHL level. And I think he'll be more impactful from that perspective. And I think his pure upside in points is higher from a fantasy perspective. But certainly Rossi will probably score. I mean, sorry, Stützle will score more goals. And so I like that. I think in fantasy they're closer, but I would still put Rossi ahead. And yeah, I do think the Senators made, I don't know what they were doing. I don't think they took the third and fifth best players at their 3 and 5 pick. And they really could have used, I know they have a lot of good centers, but Marco Rossi is better than any center they have in their system. So
do they? Who are their really good centers? Drake Batherson? Is he a center?
He's probably going to be a winger, but they have Norris and they have Logan Brown.
Colin White is someone who's supposed to do something someday.
These are their really good centers. Fine.
No, they're all like second or third line. No, that's what I mean. Like, there's no way that any of those guys. Well, I mean, there is a way, but I don't think any of those guys are going to be better than the Rossi will be. And then they took Jake Sanderson, and they have three lefties, three great left-handed defensemen, and I don't know why they did that.
So my question on Marco Rossi, and I was thinking this while listening to the scouting show that you did, Elon, was like, if everybody is like just losing it for Marco Rossi, what are NHL, like, not to, no appeal to authority going on here either. Like, but I want to understand what the disconnect is between NHL scouting teams and every other analyst on who's sharing their opinion publicly on Twitter, who has data and whatever to back it up. Like, they're not just like fly-by-nighters. Like, these are people I look to and trust, including you, Victor. So I'm just trying to get a sense of, like, I don't know if anyone here has an answer, but I would love to have more insight into exactly how these disconnects in rankings happen. And if it just becomes like a cool thing to do, like, be like, oh my God, Rossi's falling. And like his hype just grows because like with every slot he drops, and it's just that because that's exciting, or if there really is this empirical difference between the way scouting departments are analyzing prospects and, independent prospect watchers are doing the same thing.
Well, I think Matthew, I just noticed in the chat, said he's small. That's really what it comes down to. He's 5'9". And I think that there's a lot of people, a lot of scouts, and I mean, I don't know what goes on at all those levels, but a lot of people say over and over again that if you're small, you can't play in the NHL. And we see that it's tough for sure, right? Smaller players for sure have a harder time, but it doesn't mean that they can't. And I think especially people are saying, okay, maybe you can play wing like Goodrow, and maybe, you know, Jack Hughes, who's not too much taller than Rossi, will play wing. But can you play center? And that's one of the biggest things, is that Rossi is a distributor. He's a playmaker. So is he going to be a playmaking winger, or can he actually play center? I think that's part of it too.
Yeah. So I get that. Like, but it's still sort of unsatisfying, because I feel like the small narrative, like, that's behind us now. Not that we've necessarily seen a bunch of small players come in and kill it. Like, we're waiting for someone like Cole Caulfield to come in. Like, he slipped allegedly because of his size. And we know that, like, the online independent hockey people, like on Twitter and blogs since 2007 or even before, were ahead of the curve in sort of showing how the best way to interpret player data can be and how to evaluate and whatever, and like measure, like, this is the whole analytics thing, right? Like, analytics did win out at the end of the day, and NHL organizations were resistant to it. I'm just surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, that there's still this much of a lag between what we think we already know in the general public versus what NHL front offices will acknowledge. I know change takes a long time, especially with how stagnant the NHL front office talent pool is. I don't know if stagnant's the right word, but essentially, like, there's not a whole lot of new blood coming in and out. It's a lot of the same ideas being recycled over and over. So I guess now I'm going off on a bit of a rant, and we should probably refocus back to the draft. But, like, I would love to hear more from like someone, like a reporter needs to look into this, someone at The Athletic, free story idea, because we know you're all listening to the show. Should we hit the second round, Elon?
Yeah, so, okay, I'm seeing a couple names jump out. So there's one that was still in the first round. Trevor Zegras from the Ducks went 19th overall. Then you have Dylan Cousins, another center from Buffalo, going a few picks later, 22nd overall. Like, Zegras was someone who I heard a lot of buzz about going to this draft. Like, I think that Matthew and I were seriously considering taking him if he didn't get taken, like, right before our two picks at the turn. Were we, like, lucky to miss out on him? I know you're not happy with my defense pick, but anyways, but like in general, like Trevor Zegras and like Dylan Cousins, I know they're two different people. Maybe could you bring them? They were both drafted like a couple seasons ago, high up in the first round. So what kind of upside are you looking at there?
Yeah, they're very different players. They're both centers, but Zegras is definitely more of a playmaker. He makes Joe Thornton like passes. People always comment that you have to be ready because the puck will end up on your stick when you least expect it, and you just have to tap it in. That's the kind of player he is. He's going to be an assist heavy guy. He can be pretty physical. In fact, he can take some bonehead plays. So if you're in a Pims league, then you know he'll probably take some penalties. But he definitely has like you know that 70 plus point upside in the right situation. I think Anaheim is good for him. He doesn't really have a whole lot of competition. He's got Getzlaf there, but other than that, he's the best center prospect they have by far. So that's a great situation for him. He's definitely high upside. I like him. I like that pick. And so Brett got both of these, Cousins and Zegras, which is really nice. And Cousins is more of a scoring center. He's kind of more like your Jack Eichel, right? He shoots a lot. He's got a great shot. And he definitely, you know, can be more of like the 30 goal, 35, 40 assist kind of player in his prime. And so that's a nice one. It's kind of interesting because, you know, they're on the same team, Cousins and Eichel. So it's like they're similar. They need a more of a playmaker though too, right? Which is kind of funny that they took Jack Quinn, who's a goal scorer, and it's like who's gonna set up all these guys? But anyways, that was kind of funny. But they're both great. I think they offer different things. I would definitely put. It's funny that he took him in that order because I would have flipped him. I would have taken Cousins first because I think you know goals are harder to come by. They're more valuable. He shoots more, so that would probably be. I would have taken him first, but that range is decent for both.
Cool. Yeah, I guess on Buffalo, they've got Eric Staal, right? But he's only for the next season or two. Well, for the next season or two, I shouldn't say or two and two. And then also there is still Casey Mittelstadt, who I guess at this point, are we just assuming Cousins is ahead of Mittelstadt on the depth chart? And it's just a matter of time before he jumps ahead of Staal?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I heard Steve Laidlaw refer to him as Casey Middling Stats, which I love. I haven't lost complete faith in Mittelstadt, but he certainly has a lot to prove. And so, yeah, Cousins is for sure ahead of him. I think it'll be interesting to see what Cousins done. Hopefully this season he gets a shot to make the team. I think that it's possible, but he's certainly not better than Eric Staal right now. So, yeah, maybe in another season or two, I think that would be a good situation for him. And maybe Mittelstadt can play the wing and be that playmaker that they like him to be.
Right. Yeah, so Buffalo, yeah. I keep saying every year that I think Buffalo's looking like they could be really good. I'd love for it to become actually true one day, but you'd think they just got Taylor Hall. If they still can't be good, it's like, ugh, it'll be very frustrating as a Sabres fan, for sure. Mm-hmm. At this point in the draft, right, we only have a few people left who have actually played, like, some significant NHL action. You know, like, Makar and Hughes went, and then some guys left include like Philip Zadina, who's going to get taken later in the second round. We talked about Pavel Francouz, Gusev and Olofsson both actually dropped pretty far, probably just because they're a bit older and already have like significant salaries. I went with Matthew and I went with John Marino here. And some people in the chat were like, that's a decent pick. And then you were like, this is a terrible pick. And I thought it was just a really fun thing. And then I'm curious to get Brian's thoughts here. Cause like John Marino, of course, just had this like rookie season, which on paper like just looks like okay, like I think pretty good, like 38 point pace, right, 26 points in 56 games, but of course this was with only 15% of the power play time. He hardly got power play time. Pittsburgh now, like Justin Schultz is gone, he's gone to Washington, and Chris Letang, there were rumors that he'll get traded, it's looking now like he won't get traded, but you know Chris Letang always has that risk of getting injured, and also we saw Schultz getting significant power play time even though Letang was there. So like I saw, and also I was just reading articles like on The Athletic about how John Marino like just had this amazing year, like him and Adam Fox were both like maybe the two of the best rookie defensemen ahead of like Makar and Hughes, and maybe you'll say that you don't think Marino belongs in the same conversation as Adam Fox, but yeah, I was reading all this good stuff about him, and yeah, we went for this pick, and I'm curious to hear from yourself and Brian, like is John Marino like someone who, like, am I right to think he has higher upside, that he's going to get big minutes and now start getting more power play time now that Schultz is out of the picture? Or are we looking at just like a 40-point guy like forever?
What do you think, Brian?
Oh, sorry. I thought...
Go for it.
Who, me?
Or I can...
Sound like you're throwing Victor first.
All right.
Okay, Victor.
You already know what I think, but let's tell everybody. Yeah, I didn't like this pick, and I think I wrote something like he was my 400th ranked skater or something like that. But again, that's just based on his fantasy value. I think that he is a good real-life player. To me, he reminds me a lot of Mark Edward Vlasic, who's a really good player, really good defensively, certainly can like run a power play and have some offense, but you're not ever going to see him putting up 60 points, right? Even in the best situation, I doubt it. So yeah, I think a lot of that is like opportunity you're thinking, and you know, getting some decent playing time. He certainly is going to be one of the best defensemen on the Penguins, and so there's that. But I think just himself, I don't think has the upside to ever really hit like even 50 points. I'm not sure that he'll get there. So that's the reason I didn't really like it. It's one of those like better real life than fantasy. So I think that there were better options. Even though I know you want somebody that's playing now, I still think that there were probably some better guys. So sorry to say that. It's true for me.
I also, I appreciate the swing. And I think it's a swing, like, because you were counting on Letang getting injured and then Marino becoming the heir apparent to the top power play role. But I think there's a lot of directions that can go. And keep in mind, like, if you're in a dynasty, it'd be great. Like, if you miss this season as, like, with, you know, if Letang is still there this season and is blocking, say, Marino is the next in line, is blocking Marino from taking that job as the top power play quarterback, that's just one less season that Marino gets to play with the best years that Crosby and Malkin have left in them. And yes, of course, Gensel's still there, but I'm just looking long-term at Pittsburgh and knowing that their prospect pool isn't so deep. And in a dynasty context, I'm just not sure how good Marino is. I'm looking at the other defensemen who went after. Like, if I'm just trying to compare apples to apples here, I see Evan Bouchard, who I think I would have been more interested in. I see Brännström, who I don't think I'd be more interested in because I think he's stuck behind Shabbat. But I also see Ty Smith and Jamie Drysdale and Noah Dobson. And I think all three of those guys, I would have preferred taking a swing on than to John Marino, who might have a higher floor than all of them, but certainly has a lower ceiling, or at least seems to have a lower ceiling.
Yeah, totally fair. I think we were definitely considering Evan Bouchard. You know, Edmonton did just sign Tyson Barrie, so we'll see if Barrie's going to be there long-term or just for the 1 year. I guess it depends how he does. Yeah, for me, I guess it's also another thing that is just like general strategy in terms of what Brian said, like higher floor versus higher ceiling. I guess, like, in a prospect draft, maybe this is something I'll learn, or maybe this is something where you could go both ways. Like, I kind of had the feeling that I want, like, solid people that are going to contribute to my team, but I guess you're kind of thinking more like, I want a guy who's going to, like, be a superstar, though it might potentially be a bust. Like, I was kind of looking at this as, like, okay, I've got a solid, like, 40-plus point. Even if he never hits super hard, a 40-plus point defenseman in fantasy is, like, pretty solid with good peripherals, and everything I see is that he's going to play big minutes. So, yeah,
is
I definitely
that to you
don't...
worth, like, a second-round pick, though?
Well, I don't know. You're talking about like Bowen Byram, who I know Victor has said some things that maybe, you know, makes him very worthwhile if you think he'll potentially get that top power plant in Colorado. And then you said Brännström or Noah Dobson, or like, I don't know. Like, are they such a sure
thing? You're
naming
the guys who I said I wasn't interested in. I named Bouchard and Ty Smith and Jamie Drysdale as the guys who I was most interested ahead of John Marino.
Fair. So yeah, I'd be curious to know, like, Victor, forgetting about John Marino now, Brian likes Ty Smith, Jamie Drysdale. Do you see these? And who's the other one? Bouchard. Yeah. So talking about those three guys, Bouchard, Ty Smith, Drysdale, are you seeing what Brian's seeing of like big, like, I guess you're looking at like 50 plus point soon upside coming?
Yeah, I think Bouchard has the highest upside of all of those guys. And of course, if he gets to play with you know, McDavid and Drysdale and those guys, the sky's the limit, right? But he also, I think, has the most talent on his own to produce points. So I like that. I think you also glossed over the guy I would also like, two guys, actually, Erik Brännström. I think there's a non-zero chance that he's as good as Shabbat too. He's very good. And when you look at his equivalency, he's outstanding. So obviously he hasn't done it yet, and Shabbat is there and been shown that he can be great. So that might damper your expectations a little bit. But I would like that pick for your team, Elon, because he's already in the NHL, and he's, you know, has, I think he certainly has higher upside than Marino. So I would have liked that one. And Valimaki is another one who I don't think you mentioned, but he went 47th overall, and he has basically Bouchard type upside. He plays for Calgary, and he got injured last season. He was going to probably play in the NHL this past season, but he tore his MCL in training camp. So he's another guy who could probably step into the NHL this season. And you know, yeah, Giordano's there and some other guys are there, so he might not get the reins immediately, but he has really high points upside, and he's tearing it up right now in the Liga over in Finland. So I think I looked it up earlier. He's over a point per game.
Interesting. So if you had to bet right now, which defenseman is going to lead rookies next year in points, rookie defenseman, is Valimaki your pick?
I don't think that he's going to get the opportunity necessarily. That's a really tough question. Let's see. I got to look at all the options here.
I would have picked Bouchard after that Klefbom injury news, but then of course the Tyson Barrie signing kind of then puts a damper on that for next year. But we'll see.
I mean, that's like you saying, but you already have acknowledged that Letang is like Marina's got Letang.
Okay,
Bouchard's got Barrie.
I'm happy for you to tell me. I'm already like past talking about Marino. I do think Marino, even with Letang, is still a solid 40 plus point defenseman. And I don't know if Bouchard has that. Like, I think if Bouchard's not on the top power play, I don't think he's getting 40 points.
For 1 year, I think you're good.
Yeah, I don't even think Bouchard's going to be in the NHL this year, actually.
Right. Okay, so I guess let's lightning round this a little bit. We've got about 20 minutes to go, and I'd love to just keep talking to you for like 3 hours. Maybe we'll have to come back to talk about the rest of this draft at some point. But look, let's just like kind of look in blocks here. We've got the second round, and I guess how about I'll just like rhyme off the second round, and then we can sort of just like each point out some players that we think were like good or bad picks or interesting people. Okay, I took Marino to start that round. Then we've got Cousins, we've discussed. Martin Nichas is actually another guy who's played some NHL time. And yeah, I guess he's behind, obviously, Sebastian Aho, but still has some upside. And then we've got Cole Perfetti, Lucas Raymond, so two guys who were just drafted. Morgan Frost on Philly, Askarov, the goalie, Holtz, who was just drafted. Alex Newhook, Cole Caulfield, who Brian brought up. Cody Glass over on Vegas, who potentially, now Paul Stastny's gone, right? Theoretically, he can be the second line center on Vegas next year.
Yeah, for immediate impact, like amongst all the guys you just named, really going back to the last, like, to the Kako pick back 18th overall in round one, this is like almost, this is about 13 picks later. Cody Glass seems the best, like, immediate impact option. Nichas might not be far behind, but I think Cody Glass could be up there. And right after him, Nick Robertson, if he can somehow find himself in the top six, which has been sort of talked about, that's another option. Then Filip Zadina. So all of a sudden you had a run of three, like a bunch of guys who's like, okay, maybe they'll make it. I guess Morgan Frost, you might say, has a shot in Philly too to make an impact this year. But we've already seen a little bit each of Glass, Robertson, and Zadina, and think they have a pretty good shot of having an impact. So those help win now kind of teams. And then it went to Byron Bouchard, Connor McMichael, Vasily Podkolzin, which surprises me because I didn't really think he has much of an NHL like upside in terms of offense. I think he's like, he hits, right? So maybe he'll help in the peripherals category. And then a few goalies to end round two, Jake Ettinger, Kaapo Kakkonen, and Spencer Knight. But we already mentioned them in our round one goalie discussion.
Yeah, so, okay, lots of directions we can go here, but Victor, like, which of these, how about to start off, Brian said this claim that Cody Glass might have a big impact as soon as next year, and then he said, or maybe like a Martin Nichas, so I'd be curious to know, and like Filip Zadina, those are the guys who really jump out in this round of like people who have already been in the league, and now like they'll be, you know, a year older and maybe get a decent shot on their teams. Like, are any of those three guys people that you think like in terms of for drafting for like 1 year leagues next year, even like you expect something big?
Yeah, I think Glass is certainly one of those. He was good at times, but he certainly struggled a little bit with the pace of the NHL. So I think he if he can figure that out, because he was just pretty inconsistent, which is understandable for a rookie. I like that one. I think Nick Robertson looked pretty great on the Leafs, and it's just so crowded in the top six there. So if he can get a spot, then yeah, that would be amazing for him. He could have the highest ceiling in a 1 year league if he gets that spot, which is a kind of a big if, I would say. Nichas, I think, is really interesting because I think he, if he slides over to the wing, which he has played some right wing, he could be in the top six, and he has looked pretty good at times, and so he still has pretty good point upside. I like that one a lot, certainly for impact this year in Carolina. The thing I hate about Carolina, though, from a fantasy perspective, is though they just roll their lines. You know, they don't give super high minutes to any of their top forwards, and so that hurts the top end guys. But it might help a guy like Nichas. So I like that. I also think that there's a decent chance that Connor McMichael, even though he hasn't been like in the AHL or anything, Washington wants to, you know, they're in their window. They want to win now. So they may even bring him up and he's seems pretty ready. He's been doing pretty great in the OHL. So that's one, if he makes the team and he gets an opportunity, he could be pretty good too.
Is there any room on Washington in the top six though? I'm thinking like, you know, you've got Wilson, Ovechkin, Backstrom, and then Kuznetsov, Vrana, Oshie. You'd think that you need to have an injury for Connor McMichael to do something and actually like get a role. Because Washington is like the opposite of what you were saying about Carolina. It seems like Washington just like goes with that. They're yeah. high-end players, especially on the power play. But like a Lars Eller, I guess, is the next fantasy-relevant guy on that team. And like, what does he get, like 30, 35 points per season?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it depends on how they, if they change that up a little bit. And he is a very different player than anyone they have. He's very fast, and he's a pretty good playmaker. So depends, you know, they have some guys up there like, you know, Oshie is pretty slow, but he's, you know, got a great shot. So if they reconfigure it a little bit, which they might, you know, they had some success, but it hasn't gone so well since they won that cup. So maybe I just think it's someone to keep your eye on, right? Like it's a possibility, but if more than likely, if he does make it, he'll probably be a third liner.
Right. And then of the people that were drafted just in this past draft, so your Perfetti's, Holtz, Bowen Byram was taken already a little while ago, but yeah, of these guys who haven't played in the NHL, I guess I should say, like, who's jumping out at you as like the, what was the steal of the round?
Well, not to like toot my own horn, but I do have Lucas Raymond as the fourth best guy from this year in terms of like long-term upside, because I think this year, like right now, I think Holtz is certainly more ready and he's a goal scorer, but Lucas Raymond, I think he's so raw still and he's so young for this class that I think he has that pretty top end upside, you know, like Pedersen type upside. So I like that one. I mean, I took him, so of course I like it, but I think he has pretty high upside. I love Holtz because, you know, he's a goal scorer and I think his situation is going to be really good. So I like that one too. That's pretty amazing value to get Holtz at 28th overall. That was a really nice steal there. And Perfetti, you know, Perfetti went right before Raymond, which I was happy about because I preferred Raymond. But Perfetti is going into a really good situation too in Winnipeg. So I like that. And those are the Winnipeg boys, so they got their guy to cheer for him, so that's nice.
Victor, not to be rude or anything, and like I appreciate you tooting your own horn, but I like the Cole Caulfield pick that you mentioned that you had in the second round, but the Lucas Raymond pick seemed, I guess, in context seems good, but I'm not, after listening to the scouting episode, I'm not so sold on him being like this terribly high upside guy. Like maybe he seems like a good steady guy, someone you can rely on for, I don't know, 60 points, which I guess isn't that bad an option. Elon, this sort of goes with your John Marino philosophy. So I guess like I would still be trying my own philosophy drafting here would be probably to try and still take these big swings and nail that like super high upside guy who actually does end up reaching it. But the odds of actually successfully achieving that are slimmer than going for Lucas Raymond type who might have lower upside, but be a surer thing. Plus, I like a lot about what Detroit's doing. And so let's move on to round three without letting you get, unless Victor, you wanted to rebut anything I just said.
No, I'm happy with my pick, and we'll see how. We don't know, right? We don't know.
I wish we had all the draft participants on, so I could tell each of them why they made bad picks.
Well, I'm sure they're all listening. We'll
talk. I'm settling for you and Elon and poor Kevin. Okay, round three. So let's go through. I'm just going to rhyme off the first 10. So there's 20 picks in a round. I'm going to rhyme off the first 10. We'll pause for reaction. Then I'll rhyme off the second half of round three. So let's start with the first half. We've got Mo Sider, Kyler Yamamoto, Eric Brandstrom, Alex Turcotte, Arthur Kaliev, Rasmus Sandin, Yusuf Almaki, Ty Smith, Jamie Drysdale, and Barrett Hayton. Does that seem like an order that makes sense to you, Victor? And then maybe, Elon, you can share if anything went out of order there in your mind.
I mean, I think that the highest upside guys there for me, Kaliev, that's a steal in round three. There's still question marks on him, but he seems to have improved his two-way game and his scoring. His points upside is just huge. It's gaudy. If he can, especially him next to Byfield, oh man, that's going to be sweet. Balamaki, I mentioned, I think has, great, like Bouchard, really high-end upside for a points power play running defenseman. So I really like that. And I do think Brandstrom is a really great pick. Yamamoto went to the Edmonton fan. And so that makes sense. I don't think it was a huge reach, especially because like he's now, right? He's contributing now and he's got a great situation there in Edmonton. So those are probably my favorite picks in that range. I do like Ty Smith, but I just don't know if it's going to fully translate to the NHL level. So that's my only question there, but I think he has really great upside.
Yeah, well, Ty Smith on New Jersey, the one good thing he has going for him is doesn't seem like there's that much competition, like Damon Severson or whoever, like right. Last year was Vatanen on the top power play. Like, and now that PK Subban has shown that maybe that job is not for him, then that's like a wide open spot. And that's why he's like an exciting guy. But obviously he has to now show that he can handle it. Like Yamamoto is interesting to me just because I feel like Victor, like he's too old for you, right? He's 22. It's like, doesn't fit your team. Just like Kaprizov. But so what do you think about his like 26 points in 27 games last year? Like he came in, then like McDavid got injured for a little bit and he's just like on fire. Like he and Draisaitl and RNH had this amazing line and they went nuts. Obviously, if you believed that was sustainable, then you'd think you should have been drafted in the first round, I'd imagine. Like, I'd imagine even though he's 22, you'd be willing to overlook that if he was a point-per-game guy. But I'm guessing, my sense from, I guess, a lot of people in the draft since he fell to the third round is that we don't see him as actually a point-per-game guy. And maybe, you know, I guess, because to me, like, the one concern that I would have is, like, he didn't get on the top power play, like, in the playoffs. So, you know, what kind of upside can you really have if you're not going to be able to crack PP1?
Yeah, I think... I agree with all that. I mean, when you look at his numbers, I mean, 25% shooting percentage, his PDO was 1062. I mean, that's absurd. His IPP was 70. So there's clear red flashing signs that he's going to regress. I don't think he's going to regress so hard that he's like not an impactful scorer, especially in that situation. He showed, I think, enough that he clearly can play at this level and he got a bit lucky. So, you know, I think all of that together, he certainly could still be a very valuable forward. I don't know why they did. I think they're kicking themselves now that they didn't play those guys together because they were great in the regular season. And I don't know why they didn't. And it really hurt them. But I like Yamamoto. I would not have taken him in the first round, but I think here it's pretty decent value. Maybe he could have gone in the second.
It's funny that, like, because the Oilers don't kick themselves for weird decisions. Like, they just make the same bad decision again. That's why they just re-signed Mike Smith, even though, like, he might be an even bigger reason why they didn't win that playoff round or play-in round versus Chicago. All right, so next 10 picks to close out round three. So Barrett Hayton, by the way. Okay, I gotta ask really quickly. Barrett Hayton, is he good? Is he good? Like, Arizona took the super high pick. They grabbed him ahead of, like, Zadina.
Quinn Hughes.
And, like, a few others that round. Oh, Quinn Hughes. Well, okay. So everyone messed up with Quinn Hughes there. But, like, is Barrett Hayton gonna be, like, a good impact, like, number one center on Arizona? Is he gonna be worthwhile in fantasy? He's already fallen to the middle of round three in our under 82 games draft. Like, is this at least a good pick here? Or do you think even here it's, like, a reach for Barrett Hayton, who was a fifth overall pick, like, 3 years ago?
I would not have done that. I don't hate it, but he doesn't have the points upside that's going to be super huge. I mean, I think he's going to, like, to me, he's kind of a poor man's Bo Horvat, who certainly now, yes, is doing pretty well in fantasy. But how long did it take Horvat. You know, Hayden's a pretty good two-way center, and he has a great opportunity, right? Because who's the number one center in Arizona? I mean, you know, is it Dvorak? Is it, yeah.
Keller?
Like, who is it, right? It could be anyone. It could be any of those guys, or it could be Hayden. And so that's a good opportunity for him. And so that part's good, and he certainly has some decent line mates. But, I mean, I think offense goes to die in the desert, right? So I don't like that either for Hayden. I think there were probably better options. But I think he is a good player. He'll probably be one of those better in real life than fantasy, but he'll still have like fringe fantasy value. And especially in a face-off league, which this is, and if he gets tons of ice time, then he will certainly put up some decent counting stats. And so he will have value.
So you're saying that you think there were better options. Why don't we go to the final portion of this episode where we all like kind of look at the later picks. So, you know, second half of round three and then like four and beyond. Who are some people who you would say were like the better options? Like, Brian, is there someone jumping out to you as like someone that was picked like later than here that you're surprised they fell so far?
No, I just want to make good on that we said we were going to read off the rest of the third round. So it was Hayden Boldy, Noah Dobson, Joel Farabee, Owen Tippett, Philip Myers, Gabe Vilardi, Grigory Denisenko, Ryan Merkley, Drake Batherson, and Dominic Kubalik, rounding out the 60th overall pick in the prospects draft. Elon, if you're asking me the question, I thought you did well with Francouz at the start of round four. Getting him 61st, that's a pretty good spot to get a goalie, especially when looking at the rest of the goalies that went, like maybe Alex Nedeljkovic, the next round was a interesting shot to take, but I feel like Francouz is probably one of the better bets remaining at that part of the prospects draft. And then, just flipping through. I mean, honestly, like, you know, my prospects acumen is not, you know, top of the, it's not where Victor's or Will Scouch's is. So I'm interested to see who Victor has as guys who have gone later in the draft, who he's liked as like, as prospect sleepers for dynasty formats.
Well, I think just for the end of this third round, Grigory Denisenko at 57 could be the best player in that round. He has really huge points upside, and he looks like he's coming to North America and he's going to play for Florida this year. So you asked about players that could contribute this season. Elon, that could be a sleeper. Denisenko and Florida is cleaning out some cap and some players, right? So he could get a pretty decent opportunity as early as this season. So I love Denisenko there. I like Matthew Boldy as a really high upside guy. He's a ways away, so that made sense for my team because he's got some development time. I really liked Ryan Merkley too. I mean, if you're going to take a swing on a guy like Ryan Merkley in this spot, because the points upside is huge. I know some people question whether he'll even be an NHLer because he's had some issues, but he's literally some people say he's the Sharks' only prospect. So they're being very careful with him. They're being very patient with him. They're doing all the things that they can, and he seems like he's making great progress. So I think Merkley was a good swing there for the end of the third.
Okay, and yeah, I guess, yeah, like we said, we could talk forever. There's one name I got to throw at you, which is someone Matt and I took, not even the next few picks. Like, I don't even know, it was like round 8 or round 9. But like, I just started seeing tweets and just a little bit of buzz about this guy, and he might be, maybe like you're going to say, he definitely doesn't fit your team. This might not be like a long-term like superstar, but in terms of like people who might step in next year and be a great late pick, a lot of people are calling this guy the next Dominic Kubalik. So I got to ask you about Pius Suter, who led the Swiss league in points last year, and he is a property of the Chicago Blackhawks, right? He's going to be coming into Chicago just like Kubalik did, who played, I believe, in the same league and also did well. So, like, kind of coming out of nowhere, 24-year-old. Do you have any thoughts on Pius Suter? Because I was, like, just searching Twitter. A lot of people are being like, watch out for this guy. He's going to come in. He's going to surprise people. And, like, he's a name I hadn't heard before. But all of a sudden, I'm seeing he led his league in points. And obviously, it's not the highest-end league, the NL, whatever that is, the LA. National League of Switzerland. But who do you know anything about him?
Yeah, I know a little bit about him. He was close to what Kubalik did in the Swiss league, and which is not one of the best leagues, but it's certainly not Chop Liver either. It's a pro league, one of the better ones in Europe, probably the third or fourth best one. So, you know, that was pretty decent, and he definitely there's a good chance that he could be decent. I think that what Kubalik did this season was pretty special and pretty unexpected. So the chance that it'll happen again on the same team seems to me a bit unlikely. But he also had, they have the perfect roadmap, right? I mean, this is a guy, they just did it. They helped him transition his game. From that perspective, they and Chicago is great at this, right? They find these players in Europe and they bring them over and they give them an opportunity to succeed. So I think stranger things could happen. I wouldn't expect him to be quite as good as Kubalik, but maybe, a step or two behind. And certainly he looks like he's going to play. And so that's great, especially for the cap hit. So that's a good move.
Anyways, maybe just like even in just a 1 year league, just a name to know that he might come in and hey, Brandon Saad is gone from the Jonathan Toews line. So I don't know. So maybe he gets to play with Toews. I don't know. Okay, so I guess though, that was pretty fun. There's like a bunch of names, but also people could hear you talk about all these names and more on the Fantasy Hockey Life podcast that you're doing with Jesse Sevier. It's like every week. I also noticed that right now you're doing a whole run through of all the teams. So maybe, I want to thank you so much for coming on our show here. Maybe you could tell us about what you're doing on your other podcast and also about all of your articles. Yeah, where can people hear more from Victor Nuño, aside from in the Keeping Carlson patron community, where you're a great contributor?
Yeah, thanks for having the space for us to all connect. I write over at the Hockey Writers for the Sharks. I'm updating their prospect pyramid right now to include all the 2020 guys, and we'll definitely be keep. I wrote a write up on Donato, who I think was an interesting sign for them, and I podcast with Jesse over at the Fantasy Hockey Life. Right now, we're going team by team, and we're kind of breaking down everything that happened in the off season and previewing what's going to happen. And we also do a dynasty dig where we talk about all the impactful prospects. So that's been fun. We also did a mega episode on all the 2020 draftees and kind of gave our top 15 and the best and worst picks and talked a little bit about the value guys that we saw there. So that was pretty fun. So definitely come check that out and follow me on Twitter at Victor Nuño 12. Love getting questions about fantasy and hockey in general.
Yeah, definitely everyone should be checking out what Victor has to say. Like, we've known Victor for a while in our patron community and like, smart guy. I trust, even though you said some things that, again, I'm going to say, Brian, you furrowed your brow a little bit. We were a little bit surprised at some of the things Victor said, but I really respect the takes. And I just wish we could find out now. Like, the thing is, all these things are going to happen. Someone needs to hold us accountable. We need to come back. I'm going to set a reminder for myself to re-listen to this episode like 2 years from now so we can see like what was right and what was wrong after John Marino wins in Norris and like leads all defensemen in scoring. It'll be fun to come back.
Yeah. And Cal Peterson wins the Vezina simultaneously.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be the best year ever. Matt and I are going to be rich. But okay, before we close out the show, we wanted to give a shout out to good friend of the podcast, longtime patron PJ Richards, who is like become, you know, a good friend of a lot of people in our community. Like, a lot of people have been playing NHL 21 or NHL 20 with him over the years, nicknamed Poopsie Jones or Jockstrap. And PJ actually has a big surgery coming up, and we just want to wish him well. Like, the surgery is like this coming week, and we just want to let you know from the bottom of our hearts, like, PJ, we are rooting for you. We can't wait for you to get on the road to recovery so we can play some Chell. Brian, I've started playing Chell, by the way, and I'm really excited to play with PJ. And also, I just want to also give a shout out to our great community who have been really, like, you know, showing a lot of support for him and doing like amazing things for him. It's been beautiful to see, Brian. The patrons, they bring tears to my eyes.
Yeah, for sure, PJ. We are sending all our best thoughts and vibes to you, as are the rest of the patron community. So we're rooting for you, and we know you can do it.
Oh, and also, Brian, the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League, we're booting this back up. Like, we've been talking with the patrons, coming up with some new suggestions for next season. I think by the time we record our next episode, we're going to be announcing that signups are open. So I just want to let everyone know that's listening. If you're listening to this podcast, you can join the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League very soon. Like, it's, I think, the premier league in fantasy hockey. Like, we've been doing it for years now. We have a whole tiered system where you start at the bottom and you climb your way up to tier one. And like, our tier one right now is stacked going into next season. I can't wait to see how it plays out. And yeah, it's open to any patron of Keeping Carlson. So yeah, just want, you know, we're going to get a little taste here of what's to come. Brian, you know that how I said that you start at the bottom, you climb your way up? We had a great suggestion by one of our patrons, John, that we're going to be implementing for next year. Normally, you know, you start in like tier five or six, and it's like if you win your division, you get to come up to like two tiers higher. So it still is going to take you at least like 3 years to get to tier one. We're going to now, since it's a points league for next year, the person who gets the most points out of all of the Kakupfel, like last year it was 16 different leagues throughout all the different divisions. If you're in like a division of all brand new people, like the very bottom, and you get the most points over the whole season of everybody, you're going right to tier one for next year. You're getting fast tracked. So it's going to be even more competitive because that means one less spot in tier one for the people who are there to hold their spot. But yeah, so it's going to be really exciting. And I just can't wait for the Kakupfel to start also, Brian. It's like, I think we've really like honed in and made this league like just perfect. I love our point scoring format. I love everything about it. I can't wait to play. And I hope everyone will sign up next year. I hope it'll be like the biggest year ever. We've got a lot of big plans for it.
For sure. So keep an eye on our Twitter feeds and just keep listening to the show. We will definitely make it very clear to you when registration opens, and we hope you'll take part in Kakupfel season 7, I think. Oh my. Or is it 6?
Okay, we'll get that all ready for next time when we announce that signups are open. And yeah, obviously, like I said, to join the Kakupfel, you need to be a patron of Keeping Carlson. And yeah, we've got other stuff we're doing for our patrons. We've got our patron community over on Facebook and Discord. We do our monthly patron cast. The last one was a lot of fun if you want to go back and check that out. And we've got more plans coming for next season. So keepingcarlson.com/patron if you want to check all of that out. But with that, Brian, I think we've done enough. Let's let these people go home. So let's cue the outro music. And why don't you go ahead and read us the credits?
All right. This episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast was presented by Dauber Hockey and powered by our patrons. It was researched with help from Dauber Hockey, Dauber Prospects, Frozen Tools, Hockey Reference, Hockey Database, Cap Friendly, and Elite Prospects. And I'll just say thanks again once more to our guest, Victor Nuno, who will post all the links of where you can find him in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks again, Victor. That was awesome. Thanks again, Brian. That was awesome. And thanks again to the chat room and everyone who joined us live. It was great to have you here. And thanks to everyone who's listening. So just, you know, Brian, I'm a thankful guy. Thanksgiving Canada passed, but I could still feel thankful all year round, which I am. And I'm also thankful that the NHL might be starting very soon. We're starting the Kakupfel up because we're getting into fantasy season before you may know. Like, October's almost over. If the season's going to start January 1st, that means we've got 2 months to start prepping and coming with projections and doing all of our plans for our fantasy drafts. Oh my God, so excited. Okay, well, Brian, that's it for me. And I'm looking forward to talking to you on our next episode.
Until then, remember, fantasy hockey is for everyone.
Everyone.